You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's in-depth series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's News Project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Wednesday, April 28th. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about the Southern Vermont Economy Summit, which is going to be held from May 12th to May 14th. It will be returning after a one-year hiatus. Last year, of course, couldn't be held because of the start of the coronavirus pandemic, but is back this year. It will be a virtual online event as opposed to the in-person event that took place the first couple of years that it was held. Once at Stratton Mountain, and then I think a couple of times at Mount Snow, always provided a great forum for a discussion of economic questions and activities that were going on in southern Vermont. So here today to tell us a little bit about what's going to be happening this year at the event is a really great panel of folks. Really pleased to welcome to our program today Jen Stromston, who is the Director of Programs for the Brattleboro Development Credit Corporation. Also great to have with us today Jonathan Cooper, who is the Community and Economic Development Specialist for the Bennington County Regional Commission. And also Sarah Lang, who is the Southern Vermont Economy Project Manager. Folks, great to have you with us today. Thank you so much for making the time for this discussion. Sarah, I guess I thought we could perhaps start with you and have you give us a bit of an overview about what's going to be on the agenda and how the conference is going to be set up.
Great. Yeah, thanks for having us. So this year, you know, there's obviously some pros and cons to hosting something like this virtual. However, we're choosing to focus on the pros. and typically the summit is a full one day in person, like you had mentioned, at Mount Snow the past couple of years. And this year we decide to spread out the schedule across 3 days. The hope is that people can kind of chime in or, you know, attend whatever sessions it is that they are interested in and not, for a lack of a better term, be stuck in a building all day. We all obviously have really busy work schedules and, we felt it was important to provide access to all of the sessions if people were able. However, you know, understanding that people have things to do. And so picking and choosing, I think, is kind of a pro of this format, if you will. Like you said, it's May 12th, 13th, and 14th, and each day has three sessions. So there is a morning session, which takes place 9 to 11. Then there is a lunch session, which takes place 12 to 1, and then a afternoon session, which takes place 2 to 4. And so that's sort of the same play of events for each of the days. And you know, we have some really awesome keynote speakers that are nationally known. I'm really interested to see how the lunch series goes, which is our new to Vermont lunch series. Obviously, there's been a lot of conversation about new people moving to the state, you know, in general, but also more recently because of the pandemic. So we have some really interesting sort of subgroups within sort of the newcomers category, and we'll be talking to real life new Vermonters and about their experiences moving to the state, whether it was during the pandemic or you know, potentially from a, you know, another country. So I'm really excited about that specifically, and sort of the highlight, I think, is really we have an interview with Governor Scott and Lieutenant Governor Billy Gray, and they'll sort of be talking about envisioning Southern Vermont's future, our future economy. And then a follow-up to that is a Young Professionals Town Hall, where we have a panel of young professionals from Southern Vermont responding to that interview. And I'll pause there and let, you know, Jonathan and Jen sort of step in with maybe their sessions they're excited about.
All right. Well, Jonathan, why don't we hear from you first? What are the ones that you've highlighted and checked off as must-sees?
Well, you know, one of the, I think there's a lot of interest in discussion about, we have one, I think, starting off the summit on, you know, federal rural policy. And I think in the past 12 months, we've, you know, all become somewhat accustomed to a level of federal funding, of programming that is sort of new for a lot of us. And we see it touching all corners of life in a way that perhaps it was not so visible before. So I think this comes along at a really critical time, and it's something that we can really dig into. And in some ways, it's not as abstract as maybe conversations about federal policies may have been in the past, and thinking about, you know, how does Southern Vermont look from DC? We've seen DC all over Southern Vermont in the past year, and I think that that's something we'll really be able to key in on.
And Jen, I'm sure you think all of them are interesting and worth going to see, but are there any ones that stand out or really kind of speak to you in terms of your particular interests and work at the BDCC?
Yeah, I think, so there's two specific workshops. One of the things we always try to have within the summit are sessions where people can walk away with something that they can do in their own community. Or can walk away with some new information or some new ideas. So we have a community project session where basically it's highlighting some sort of like community-based initiatives that have, you know, made a sort of incremental or dramatic change. And, you know, they get unpacked enough so that the folks in the audience or people, you know, who watch it later on can really figure out like how they might be able to translate that to their own community. So that's really important. We have a session that we've been working on that really started with an inspiration around like how to improve conversations about our economic values, about sort of how do those translate into economic development and business. I think we get a lot of really good questions we get into communities about how the work that we do as economic developers relates to the things that people really care about. And so we built this year's sort of business session. We always unpack businesses and feature businesses. It's an economic summit, right? But this year we really built it around that concept of like, how do we talk about what matters? And so for instance, you know, people, this is a state that's really committed to a high minimum wage and cares about the standard of living for the working people of the state. But sort of talking about how do companies afford that? How do companies develop a business model, access markets, and do things so that they can afford, like, not just to pay the minimum wage, but to really pay people what they need to live well? That's just sort of one small example. So I'm really excited about that session. That's going to be really, I think, lively and interesting, and some really cool businesses featured that I think people don't know about. The economy is not visible to everyone. And then my sort of, you know, I'm really excited about the rural policy. One, the Brookings Institution research really helped us figure out our strategies early on during the pandemic. They helped break down what they saw, what they thought was going to happen in the economy, which sectors would be hit when and how and what that would mean. And we literally took that research and applied it to our regional economy to try to understand what was happening that we couldn't see versus what we could see, which was restaurants closing. And so having someone from the Brookings Institution open up the summit is sort of a dream come true for us. But also this has been a year, you know, not just about pandemic economic disasters and, you know, the health threat and disasters, but it's also been a year about reckoning, you know, with issues around equity and diversity and racism in this country and in the state. And so during this time, the state appointed this like fantastic person, Susanna Davis, who has been leading the state's work in this area and doing it in a way that I think we can all really relate to. It's sort of like I wouldn't say technocratic, that always sounds negative, but really working on how the state does business as a way to really make substantial change around diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so she's, and also she's just renowned as a fabulous speaker. So really excited about her. And then last but not least, our keynote speaker is Majora Davis, Majora Carter. And she's someone who I had long admired because of, as a planner, her work began around environmental justice, but then moved over time to community development and economic development because she was grappling in her community in the Bronx, decades ago with the same questions we grapple with, like, how do we get the kids not to leave? Like, and how do people who are here get a better chance to participate in the success of businesses and in building equity and being part of economic success? So those sort of questions around, which we typically think of gentrification as like an urban thing, but it's really, gentrification is a question of who gets to have a stake when things get better in the economy and who doesn't have a stake in that. And so she's fantastic. And Sarah and I had a chance to see her speak a few years ago. And I was like, okay, this is a dream that we have. And because of virtual, we can make it happen. So that's sort of, the bookends of the conference are some things I'm just super excited about and great examples of like people we might really never be able to get to speak except for virtual. So big things.
All right. Yeah. I mean, looking through the agenda and the list of events, I was thinking, my God, everything looks interesting. How am I going to be able to catch everything over the course of 3 days when I'm supposed to be working or doing something else? But definitely want to catch as many of these as possible because they all touch upon important points and aspects of the economy here in Southern Vermont that we've all talked about for a while now. I guess I thought maybe we could drill down into a couple of those issues there. I suppose, as we hopefully anyway are beginning to emerge out of the pandemic and into whatever the new normal is. I mean, are there certain questions or issues around how that may unfold or some of the concerns you've been hearing about from the folks you talk with about how the state will be recovering? Are we poised for a fairly good and relatively rapid recovery, or is there more caution and concern being expressed out there by the folks that you're in touch with? And Sarah, perhaps I'll go back to you first just to see what your takeaway is on that.
Great. Yeah, I think, if we want to sort of tie these issues to specific summit sessions, I really think the in conversation with the governor and lieutenant governor and the young professional town hall is a good one to sort of pair with that question. The questions that we provided or that we will be asking state leadership are very much future focused and really focused on, how are we supporting the young people moving here, the young families that are here, so that they can continue to stay here and have a good work-life balance and quality of life. And so I think it'll be really interesting to hear the responses from Governor Scott and Lieutenant Governor Molly Gray. And then on top of that, hearing from the young professional panelists on sort of what they think about how our state leadership is going to go about either bringing back our economy or, making it better than it was before for this specific demographic.
Well, the timing around that is perfect because it was just a couple of days ago, I guess, the census report came out, which showed Vermont had grown, I think, 2.8% in population over the last 10 years, which I guess the governor said, well, that was better than he expected, but still that left us, I think, in the bottom five of the 50 states in terms of population growth. Retaining population and attracting new people here is obviously something I'm sure everyone's interested in. We've seen, this upsurge of people coming to Vermont or at least buying real estate in Vermont and moving here at least temporarily. Do we think that there's a good chance that some of those folks who moved here over the past year to escape, the urban areas they were living in has a chance of, being a longer lasting thing? Or what sense are you getting from the people you talk to about that?
I'm happy to start off. I think that I believe the answer to that is yes, that there's a good chance that people will stay. I think that's part of our charge. And that's something that, in the last year, we've had the opportunity to find different ways and avenues to sort of rally as communities and to think again, to take another look at ourselves, at what we have, our assets, and why living here is a great opportunity for people and a great option. In large parts, one of the things that I've seen happen is that when people arrive, we now have sort of programs in place to welcome people, to get people up to speed and to answer questions. And one of the advantages that Vermont has over almost every other state that people are moving from is small is beautiful. And we're getting better and better and better at making that case. And certainly with, as I sort of mentioned earlier, that there's a lot of assistance and programs, people in their businesses, you know, there's a lot of programming around, you know, people have been able to see Vermont's small scale successes in our vaccination rollout. You know, there's a lot of examples that people have right in front of them. It's like, this is a good place to live. The Boston Fed recently released research about material harm to the pandemic, and Vermont had the lowest level, but not initially. And it cited directly in the research that the capacity of the state's government to bring those resources to bear directly into individuals and households made a problematic situation a little less problematic. And that's something that was a real feather in the cap, a notch in the belt, and just one example of going beyond marketing and branding into, you know, really getting to see what the value is in living here. So, you know, I'm an optimist by nature, but I also like having the opportunity to demonstrate that value.
And Jen, what's your sense of that?
I'm so glad Jonathan took that one, because that was really better stated than I could have done. So thank you. But agreed. So there's so many things to think about, to worry about, and to be hopeful for. But so I'll be the pessimist. I'll be the I'm good at that one. It is my job a little bit to worry. So Matt Barowitz, who's our, you know, amazing economist from the Department of Labor, has been making some new presentations that really highlight our challenge around labor force. So that there's a variety of drivers of that. I won't pretend to know all of them, but you know, the state's workforce was already too small, and we had employers going begging for workers, and it was that causes harm. That causes economic harm. What it means is, you know, if they make widgets and they can only make 80% of the widgets that they need to make, they are less profitable, they're less sustainable as a business, they're less able to compensate their employees better, the revenues that they pay to the state are lower. And this is already a problem going into the pandemic. The pandemic has driven a drop in labor force participation. And some of that is people who are still on, you know, unemployment for good reasons, right, obviously. And that will continue until the fall. But it's also been people who are, it's women who've left the workforce because it's just been untenable for them to, you know, manage their outsized domestic responsibilities as women still have in this day and age alongside work. Homeschooling your kids virtually, virtual schooling is homeschooling. And so that alongside work has not worked for many. So the exodus of women from the workforce is really noticeable in Vermont and nationally. And also the youth workforce participation rate is at, you know, was already bad, and it went from bad to horrendous. And, you know, youth meaning like 18 to 26 year olds. So we have a labor force that was already dropping dramatically, and it has plummeted. That employers are desperate. They're just simply desperate. And the ones that don't have to be here, that can do their business elsewhere, they must be considering other options. And that's really bad for Vermont's economy. And so the flip side of that, right, the optimist side is like, this is an opportunity for us to face what we were facing slowly and to just really embrace it and say, we have to welcome newcomers who can and will do jobs that need doing. And that by nature means we have to welcome diversity, because America's workforce is much more diverse. You know, when I look at the nursing workforce in this region versus the nursing workforce nationally, it is dramatically different, right? There are many, many, many more people of color or from international birthplaces in the national workforce than we have here. And so we have an opportunity to welcome people, but it also means we have to challenge ourselves to be able to welcome diversity and to do it well. You know, and that starts with people like us, and it means communities as well. But that is our future. If we are to have an economic future that is not doubling down on income inequality and sort of, you know, people who, you know, have income somewhere else, you know, and then folks who mow their lawns.
You know, I think, Jen, you make a really good point there, because it's, you know, 2.8%, that's our, I think, our second decade in a row of 2.8%. And the U.S. It's been, what, 7.5% for the last decade, and then almost 10% the decade before that. And so we're getting a sense of how there's two things in play. One, obviously, we're growing too slowly, and this we can't continue to fall behind. But also, it's slowing down overall. And so it will be difficult without concerted efforts to play catch up in a way. So I think that that's really one of, you know, as Jenna said, the numbers are difficult to, you know, difficult to feel great about. And it gives us an opportunity in a lot of ways to see this is what our employers are seeing. And this is why these decisions are being made. People that work in economic development like we do have these conversations with employers all the time. I've been here since 2016, and that's never not been an issue. So it's, but now if we can have those broader conversations about that and about how we will go about addressing that and who will help us address that and like who Vermonters are and who Vermonters will be, I think that having that conversation broadly, publicly is an essential step, and one that I'm glad that, as Jen's pointed out, we have to do it now.
Where does the whole broadband thing fit into this? I mean, in past conferences, I remember going to the ones that you held, and this was always a very important topic. The lack of quality broadband across the state, particularly in rural areas, was always highlighted as being a problem. It seems like there is just an avalanche of federal money coming to the state that is going to be targeted towards fixing that, or at least upgrading it. That's probably a year or two long project, but do you feel like we've sort of we're at the point of turning the corner on that one, that good broadband service will be sort of a given in Vermont in a couple of years at least, and that will help retain that population we want to keep around?
Yeah, I think the reason you're not maybe seeing anything specific in the summit related to broadband is because of sort of this sea change that is happening. And, you know, as much as we like love talking about broadband, you know, there is a limit and there are so many other things going on around broadband that's not in the summit that we really didn't want to kind of take away from all of the movement that is happening. You know, the CUDs are really, you know, are coming together and pushing hard and getting things done. And, you know, I didn't think having a summit session or, you know, a connectivity breakfast, which is what we've done in the past, it didn't really make sense because they're already doing so much work around this already. And I think, you know, I'm really proud of sort of the role that the summit has played in the connectivity discussion, in bringing people and resources together. And I think it's almost at a point where it's maybe too big for the summit. You know, there's just so much happening and at a pace that is, you know, never fast enough, but I think it's kind of grown out of the summit into reality, which is amazing.
It's funny, Sarah, like when we were first deciding when is the summit going to take place, what time of year, and we arrived at springtime. I was like, it's right after the legislative session is concluded and our legislators are home and they're able to participate, which sounds like a quaint notion from a bygone era at this time. But the idea is that that right now, you know, broadband bills related to this are, you know, at Senate Finance, they're in conversation. This is a really this is a crucible moment because we have our CUDs, we have our telecom providers, our excellent ISPs. There's everybody's having this conversation, and it is, you know, it does feel, Andrew, to your point, that something is going to give, and we are coming to this decision point, and we are finally seeing, you know, the market in some ways, or a heavy thumb on the market, finally making that, you know, prompt for rural connectivity. And I think when we think of the rural reaches of our Southern Vermont region, we think of all the businesses that we know that are operating there. These like smaller organizations, operations, and as they look to broaden their market, you know, they've needed this service for quite some time. And I know as a housing summit that Sarah, you put together a couple of years ago, and hearing that something that was not an issue 10 years ago comes up in the first 30 seconds of conversation. So we know that this is another, you know, obviously we've talked to death the notion of how important this is, but I believe you are correct, Andrew, that this is, the time is now, and we will be seeing something in the next 3 to 5 years. I think that once, you know, whatever the market is for a foot of fiber optic cable, et cetera, you know, the technology is going to be in demand across the country. So I think the conversations that people are having right now are really about organizing ourselves to be in the best possible position for what will be a true rush on these materials and this labor force in the years to come.
We have time for about one last question before we have to go. I guess I was just wondering, has there been, during the course of the event, will there be much talk about tourism recovery? I mean, last year, of course, was a completely crazy year, and not as many people came here to visit. They couldn't. Are the people you're talking to here saying, hey, I'm pretty optimistic that this is going to be a year a little bit more like normal, and folks will be coming here in the summer and the fall to, you know, go to restaurants and spend money in inns and lodging and everything else that they spend money on that, you know, helps boost the economy of the state?
I'll just jump in there and say, you know, one of the things we try to do with the summit is not cover things that other people cover super well. And Vermont has a terrific tourism summit. And that's, you know, something that we have participated in the past, and there's often kind of cross-pollination between the different events around the state. And we pay pretty close attention to what other people are doing and vice versa. So we're pretty careful not to try that. And I think another, just, you know, this is a chance for us to sort of remind everyone of the sphere of the regional planning commissions, the regional development corporations versus sort of the entities like the chambers and the DBAs and other sort of local organizations is, you know, we support those folks and they are our partners in economic development, and there's a lot of crossover, but you know, we don't play in the marketing and tourism sandbox except insofar as we have partnerships around attracting marketing to and attracting people to move here and to work for us. And so that's one of our biggest collaborations across Southern Vermont. You know, we, Windham and Bennington, we work together kind of on a daily basis around what Jonathan was alluding to earlier, sort of our Southern Vermont Welcome Wagon and our SoVermont.com. And those are really people marketing initiatives. And our partners in that are chambers and local development organizations because of that crossover between marketing to visitors as well as to folks we'd like to have come stay here. So there's a lot of partnership there. We won't be featuring much of that during this conference, again, just, you know, due to questions of time. But that is probably in Southern Vermont one of our proudest and most well-articulated and enduring collaborations is around that work that really grew out of Tropical Storm Irene and has been you know, sort of blossoming in the last couple of years.
Okay. And Sarah, just over to you for the last word. If folks want to register for the summit, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, so any information, you know, details on the sessions as well as how to register, you can find at SoVermontZone.com/summit. And, you know, we're accepting registrations up to and even through the 3 days. And so if, you know, people realize they forgot to register and they're, you know, we're already 1 day in, they can still register and get access to the other 2 days. So SoVermontZone.com/summit is where all that information is.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there for now. But for those of you who have never attended one of these summit conferences, I can heartily endorse that it would be an excellent use of your time. Be held this year, as we said earlier, from May 12th through the 14th. Starts at 9 o'clock in the morning and runs into the afternoon. I just want to thank our three panelists for taking the time to be with us to give us a little preview of what to expect. I want to thank Sarah Lang, Jonathan Cooper, and Jen Stromston for being with us. And thank all of you as well. Hope you found the program interesting. And well, we'll see you again the next time. Meanwhile, have a great day.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.